It's Saturday morning, the 6th of June, 2015, in the Lucy Coleman studio here in Los Angeles, California. You and your friends have been sitting around discussing the nature of whether God really exists or not. One person has his idea about who God is based upon maybe what a parent, a grandparent shared with them. Maybe somebody else is just totally ticked off at church people at the way they discuss and define who God is, and you really want to know. You're kind of inquisitive. It's like today, an off day. Nobody's going to work, hanging around the house. Somebody brings out their version of the Bible. It's a kind of a quirky thing. Doesn't sound like King James because it's one of these newer renditions. Everything has been changed. But still, you're an interesting group of young people and you're researching this idea because whenever you do certain things, you feel a certain surge or amount of guilt in you, and you're wondering where this came from, and you remember someone in your family told you that's because of a guilty conscience. Your conscience, let your conscience be your guide. So if your conscience is not guiding you correctly, well, then there's a particular problem. And so you want to know what God is saying, how he's saying it. How do you choose the person that's going to talk to you about the Bible? Which one in the group? Do you choose the person with the most education? Do you look at that? Do you ask the head of the household, or do you expect the head of the household, or who you call the head of the household, albeit it could be a woman or a man, do you expect them to have all of this knowledge? Well, that's what we're going to talk about, and I'm going to try to help you with this as we listen to a little Marcus Roberts in the background, the Marcus Roberts Trio. It's playing a nice number. It's kind of old. Coal After Midnight. It's kind of nice. I like that number. But let's do, do. Yeah. Thank you, Marcus. So what do you do and how do you do it? You know, how do you choose? How do you choose the person that's going to guide you into this knowledge of what this ancient book means without messing you up? And then how do you know? Is it that important? All right, another question that you ask, that you must ask yourself, is it important? I was thinking about it this morning as I got up. Very quiet evening, very good. I was thinking about doing this cast last night on the 5th, as I promised to do, but my mind wasn't ready for it. I wanted to really get up fresh. Let's say that you call yourself a teacher and you want to teach somebody in your group. You feel this unction, this urge, let's call it that. In the old evangelical days of mine, I would call it the inspiration of the Holy Spirit moving on your heart to share with your dear brothers and sisters the immaculate, magnificent Word of God in such a way that people's lives will be changed. All right, let's say that you feel that kind of calling in your life, and you feel compelled. You feel compelled to speak about what you think God is saying to your group. You as a teacher have a number of tools in the teaching tool chest. And if you're going to be effective in planning or choosing the right tool for the right job, you really want to get serious about that. It would be equivalent to myself going to a lecture at the college to teach and unprepared, and I open the book to the place where the lecture begins and I have no idea what it's talking about. Well, you know me, I like lecture style. Lecture is a good way to cover up large amounts of material. Let's say that you want to go through, you know, oh, goodness forbid, the book of Revelation in a lecture style, you're going to lose your audience because you can't do it that way. I recall when I was going verse by verse through certain books in the Bible, I had to consider my audience. See, you have to consider your audience because the book or the verse, the chapter or the portion that you're going through may be handling complex issues, such as the relationship between New Age teaching and Orthodox theology. You're going to have to bridge that gap. You're going to have to know the difference of the two. Okay? When I taught homiletics, which is the art and science of teaching the Bible to preachers, and I was always successful. I had a couple of bright students that followed my teaching in that way. I recall one gentleman said, "Why do we have to do it your way?" And I just shook my head. I said, "You don't have to do anything, but you're not going to be successful teaching anything out of this book, teaching it any way you want to do it." Okay. On the downside, lecture does not demand much of your student. And so it can make them very passive in their understanding about things. But at the same time, lecturing can be one of the best ways to convey the information that you want to give over, especially if the information is put together in a way that it hasn't ever been put together before. And you have to know that your students haven't heard this. I have so much, you know, I've been throwing out a lot of things around the house here, a lot of paperwork, notebooks, things like that, things that I'll never get typed down, never put in a book. I don't want to put them in a book. Some people come through here and they say, "My gosh, you have enough work here to write a book, and more than a book." Of course I do, but I'm not going to do it. The days for that are well done. Now, there's another kind of study too, and we call that individual study and reflection. Now, that's one way that you can help the people. You know, you got a group of people by your pad and wherever you stay, and you say, "Hey, what are we going to do tonight?" "Well, you know, we're going to do something intellectual. We're going to open up our Bibles. Let's look at the verse, Jesus wept." Okay. And you want to get together and you want to just sit down. Why did he weep? You know, that's when he got back to the tomb of Lazarus, his friend in Bethany, and Lazarus had died. Now, you can look these things up. If you're driving, of course you can't. But when you get home, you can. You can look that up. And that would be a good way for me to teach you over this internet thing here. This can also be a powerful way to handle content, especially if you give people guidance during their study, this individual study and reflection kind of a thing. Some people begin their Bible studies by asking people to reflect silently on the passage for a few minutes, you know, giving them two or three questions to guide their thinking. That's pretty good. But if you don't have a group of people sitting in front of you that can reflect enough on that of the spiritual things, you're going to run into a problem with that. At times, and I use this often in my approach, written outlines can help people stay focused during the time of this reflection. They can look at that outline and say, "Ah, John wants me to think about this. Think about that." I would add one thing to that, you know, to help you out a little bit if you're going to put that together. Give them time enough. Let them speak freely. Don't cut them off on what they think immediately. Don't correct them, especially if you're the teacher and you have the knowledge of this, you want to know what they think about it. And so that as you guide them and give them the truth about what they're really looking at, they will know in what direction to go. Okay? So, that's one way to do it. Now, this does a couple of things. First, it shows people that with a little perseverance, they can look into that book. They can look into these verses for themselves. Sometimes this kind of guided reflection is the only time people discipline themselves to study the Bible, either alone or in the group. And you need to know that as a teacher, because they aren't going to open up that book. They may be ashamed to do it. They don't want their friends to laugh at them. They may open it in desperation. You know, someone in the family dies. What happens to the soul after it leaves the body? Then they're going to talk to someone in the ancient religion of Christianity. And I call it that because this is not a faith that is embraced by many in this country these days. And so it's known as this ancient religion, the religion of our grandparents. And a lot of times when these youngsters go to church with their grandparents, they don't have the foggiest idea of what's going on. They don't. They have no idea what's going on. Second, this primes the pump, if you will. You know, this reflection attitude, it primes the pump for the discussion that follows. People discover themes and questions in a particular text that may be very important to them. Things a mini lecture on the teacher's part would miss. So this reflection takes them in deeper into it. It primes the pump to get them more interested in what you're going to share with them. And I am putting this emphasis on this. If you are not a spiritual person connected with God, loving your students, loving them, caring for them passionately in your heart of hearts for their lives. I was working in the college one day and a student came up to the lectern and I was in the midst of giving out tests, taking tests, answering other questions, and the student wanted to have an elongated conversation with me. I couldn't. It was impossible. They were bringing back incidents of something that they said, that I did. I didn't recall it. I wasn't trying to recall it. I was trying to focus upon what I was trying to get done right there. But the student was adamant about it and unfortunately left in a huff. I'm going to have to deal with that, and I'll probably have to make some revisions somewhere after I do some in-depth study on that. So that's why, you know, priming the pump is very important, because a lot of the things that you said can be misunderstood if you say something out of the context of it being said. But people want to be forced to be engaged with the text, but before long the text engages them if you prime the pump on a good way. I like that. A third way to address this, teaching of these small groups in your home, apartment, break time. You want to share something and you don't want to come across like an evangelical, you know, giving people demands on their lives and stuff like that. No. You're not doing that. You're just sharing what you've learned to be true. And then what you want to do is you want to share why that is true. Do you understand what I'm saying? Why that is true. It's very important. Group investigation is one way. This is a way that you can make use of the material already put together well by others. In other words, I found that if there's a journal or if there's something that everybody has a dictionary and you can look up a word in the dictionary and try to, you know, exegete that word, break it down. What is the definition of grace according to this author? might be one way to approach it. Or what are the principal ways that people deal with personal trauma, according to the article? So see, you can have a group investigate a printed article that you can put out and read something. It can be something currently discussed on the news, such as the police behavior of African American and Hispanic American males, whether citizens or not, and to look at that from the biblical perspective instead of looking at it from the political or racial perspective. This group investigation, with the way of using some spiritual fervency, can do it. You know, I had a wonderful discussion just a couple of days ago here in my home. Two or three of T's friends came by, and I don't mind them bringing their friends in my home. It's my new pulpit, my new congregation. These youngsters come through here, I can talk with them, I can relate to them. Why? Because we do group investigation. They're sitting around the table. I throw out a question. I said, hey, what are you guys' thoughts on this? How do you guys do this in this day and age that you're living in? If you may let me peek into your environment and your society and to ask that question. How would you do that? Do you see how I did that? And it's beautiful. That happens around here all the time. And I ask questions like that. This not only is a way to deliver the content, but it also starts building the relationship with your students. But you have to do that with wisdom. You know, you got your kids or your grandkids coming by the house, they bring a friend by. First thing that you have to do is check it out. I'm going to give it to you. The first thing that you have to do is you must look at that person and you have to befriend them. You befriend them with your eyes. You may not like what you see they have on because they dress different from you. I have learned this in the past couple of weeks since the death of my sister. Because my sister told me before she died, listen to me, older people that listen to me. She told me before she died that she was tired of this life. She couldn't stand the music. She can't stand the way the children act. There's no respect. And of course, when we've let spiritual things go, and we've let them go, that's the result of it. I'm saying to God, and I mean that, Lord, I'm still here. I'm not dying of nothing. What do you want me to do? I think it strange that the evangelical Christians that I used to hang out with keep asking me that question. How are you? And I don't know why they keep asking me how I am, as if they're expecting me to say, oh, I've discovered I have leukemia, cancer, thyroid problems, and all that other kind of stuff. I don't know what. But why did they ask me that? I'm doing the way I'm always doing. I'm John Coleman. I'm getting up in the morning. I'm constantly thinking about God. I'm also constantly thinking about these young people that are in my congregation that comes by. I got one guy, he's so confused. Oh, I won't even get into that. So confused. How about group discussion? Would that be a way to discuss what God might be saying? Group discussion can occur only after people have been provided with information. So you have to know that. There isn't going to be any discussion unless they're all given information, either from the lecture or the group investigation, for instance. In group discussion, they respond and work with the information they have. For example, after discussing the background of the interpretation of, let's say, 1 Corinthians chapter 14, do you know what that's all about? Yeah, you know what that's all about. Do I have to turn to it? I hope I don't have to turn to it. You know, it says, pursue love. Verse 1, pursue love and strive for spiritual gifts, and especially that you may prophesy. Just stopping right there. Looking at this and also looking at the role of women in the church or in Christian circles, you might even discuss the reactions to a particular newspaper clipping about the conservative stance of women and men, excommunication that the church does. Does it work if you're in a home church setting? It's these kinds of things that you want to give some kind of, what can I call it? It's these kinds of things that you want to give place to. Naturally, group discussions and group investigation are the heart of most of the small Bible study groups because people are unprofessional teachers and they can put this together very quickly. Now, where the Bible itself is the article under discussion. See? And then, this is what I do in the classroom a lot. You know, you break into twos or fours or small groups. In the college setting, it's more of five or six people in a section, and they have to work through a particular problem. But that may be a variation of a group discussion, but I've used these kinds of small groups when I've spoken to people in the college setting. I ask people to turn to the person next to them and to talk for them and talk to them for a few minutes about something that I've just taught. See, that's always a good teaching methodology. I brought recently some books in my office from the garage office out there that I want to hold. And one of the books was entitled Teaching Tips. I've used that book, oh my goodness, ever since I've been in seminary. I've been using that book for years. And see, bro, man, this is much better than going outside messing with the dogs and have them barking up the window. Bro man just walked in. He wants me to take him walking on this Saturday. I probably will. All right. So, breaking into the groups. Now, what makes for a good question? Let's say that, you know, you really want to have a good study, right? And you got a lot of questions on the floor. People want to, all right, well, if there is a God, this and that, this and that, this and that. I mean, how do you do that? As you can understand and realize, most of the methods that you may be relying upon on getting people to talk to one another, those require that you ask them questions that will elicit a discussion that's going to make sense to everybody in the group. See, you don't want to start talking about eschatological ideas, and most of the people in the group that come in late don't even know what the study of eschatology is. See, as you prepare your class, then you have to carefully craft your questions. You get what I'm saying? Craft your questions, remembering these characteristics that you have in front of you. And those characteristics need to become the characteristics of a very good question. That's what you have to realize. Now, it can be answered by the people asked. In other words, that means that I have to ask questions about things that people know. You as a teacher don't want to, you know, some people try to teach from this book. I don't know whether you've ever had them come by your home or you go and visit their home when there's a Bible study. You know, have you ever been home and somebody calls you and says, hey, John, what? Well, we're having a study over here. We'd like you to come and visit with us. Okay. And how do you want me to participate? Oh, just bring your Bible and just come and just enter into the conversation. Now, if I hear something discussed and it's wrong, I'm not going to put on my pastor badge and correct him. I'm going to say, you know, I think maybe what you may need is a little bit more insight on that. And that's why I don't visit those kinds of studies, especially if I think that the person that has prepared the study is not adequately equipped enough to teach. Some people want to teach because they just want to be a teacher. They've always wanted to be a teacher, but they don't know the first qualities of it. I knew a couple of people. There's one that I'm thinking about in particular. He took all of my classes and failed practically every one of them. He was not a teacher. And he had a position in the church. as a teacher, and I would go and sit in his classroom and listen to him teach, and I regretted the day that I even ordained him. Well, I made a number of errors, but what do? You tell a person, you're no teacher, you can't think straight. Your students are not going to be thinking straight. The average length of my sermons are 90 minutes. I'm thinking about putting up another one on Sunday, one that has never been heard before, because I have quite a few laid out before me here. But I preach 90 minutes. I don't take a break. I don't have 10 pages of manuscript. Usually my sermon is on 3 sheets of paper, single-sided, and that's it. Maybe 2.5 sheets, and I can talk for 90 minutes because I have something in my head. So let's go back to this, how we ask the question, right? Here's a question. All right. When did you first realize that grace was more than just a word? Now, that's more likely to work than, what are the 3 principal views of the atonement? See what I'm talking about? See? You can ask the latter question only when you've given them, excuse me, through the lecture or the group investigation, more information upon which to base their answer. And I've seen so many teachers, they know the answer and the students don't know it. And then when you ask the student a question that nobody can answer, and then you kind of smile and answer the question, what you've done is you've alienated your students. That's why you have to be very careful who you allow to teach in your individual home church, whatever you want to call it, Bible study methods, because they will screw your mind up. Egotistic, unbent egotistical desires. You know, they're just fleshly desires of him, because we're humans. We all want to be important. And some of us coming up, especially in the part of town that we come up in, I mean, and man, practically every young person I speak to, one, you know, young person in their 20s and 30s, met a young man about 33 years old, just recently released from prison. Here recently, I've been meeting a lot of guys that's just getting out of jail. And it is the most wonderful, listen to me, it is the most wonderful thing to meet these people, because they're just as smart, talented, as brilliant as those of us that have never gone to jail. Hold up. That's my phone. Well, that was wonderful. A call from my old, not old, but my a senior elder of the church. There's some church stuff over here that they haven't picked up, and I want him to come and get it because it belongs to them before I have a clean sweep and start cleaning my entire office out here. But I find these individuals that I'm sharing with, I mean, sitting around the table talking with them about their lives and about their dreams and their hopes. Let me tell you a story. There's one young man that came by here to visit another one of his friends. He had recently got some very loud woofers. I guess these are the speakers that they put in their cars when they listen to their music. They listen to it very loud. They're a different generation than we were. Not any different. Wait, first let me give you my story. I was 20 years old, going down the street on Central Avenue. I had just passed Rosecrans, going south on Central Avenue, going to visit my father and my stepmother down on Caldwell and Central. If you know anything about a map, you're following me. I was in my white Corvair, 62 Chevrolet Corvair, with the engine in the back, with my windows rolled up. It was an overcast day like it is today. And I was listening to, oh, some Motown music or something, and I was just singing along. And when I looked up in the rear view mirror, there was a big red fire engine behind me with the lights flashing, sirens going, and they were swishing their hands to get me to move out of the way. I'm in the middle of the street just rolling, listening to my music loud as all get out. That was me at 20 years old. Now, I'm sitting up in my house trying to watch a movie. A young man comes by to visit Terrence. And I hear this whoop, whoop, and my windows are shaking. The walls are shaking. Whoop, whoop. And I said, oh, my God, who is this? And they stopped right in front of my house and whoop, whoop. And I looked out the window. They were on the phone. They didn't call me. I don't know who it was. Whoop, whoop. That thing kept going like that. And then Terrence pulls up in my driveway in his car, and he gets out of the car, and they're all talking loud, and this whoop, whoop, and the music is still going on. And I opened up my front door, and I gave them a piece of my mind. I said, if you don't turn that blankety-blank music down, you are disturbing my neighborhood, me, and drawing attention to me in a way that is unruly. I will get you to turn it out. And the young man that was recently out of prison that I met came up to me and said, oh, sir, I'm so sorry, so sorry. And the young lad said, I'm so sorry. And he grabbed my hand and he said, sir, I'm so sorry. He said, you know, I've been in jail for 7 years and I had a little money and I always wanted these and I bought them. And he said, I was just appreciating my music. And it took me all the way back to when I was 20 years old. And I understood and I said, son, I'm sorry for hollering at you. It's just that it's dark outside and this is a peaceful neighborhood and you want to consider others. You know, before he left my house that evening, he told Terrence, he said, the old man is so kind. And he told Terrence, he says, you're very blessed to be able to stay here a couple of days with him to get your life back on track. And he said, I wish I had that around me. See? See? That's what church is, people. Church ain't getting up on Sunday morning tomorrow, putting on all those glad rags and going there singing the same old songs you've been singing, doing the same old things you've been doing. You got a world full of people out there. Now, if you want to put together an impromptu Bible study, continue to listen to me. The question can be answered by the people asked. This means that you have to ask questions about things that people know about. You can't be asking no questions about metaphysical things. How do you think angels have sex with humans and all that kind of stuff? What? Let me give you a hint. They know, for instance, about their own experience. So, when did you first realize, if the question is about grace, when did you first realize that grace was more than just a word or more than just a person? Because if you say, what is grace? I say, oh, she's my neighbor. She lives down the street. So you got to ask them something that they know about concerning connected to the subject matter. It also means that what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to take into account the unique experience of people in the class, because if they have not had the experience that you have had, take for instance me, myself, and I, the aged semi-retired pastor, because I will never retire from what I'm doing. I've been talking 33 minutes now, and I'm just getting started. Most of the people that have been studying with me for years knows that my mind is this way. It will always be this way. It will never stop being this way. I will never stop loving doing what I'm doing. They may not like me in the church. Hurrah, hurrah. I don't have to be in no building. That's what I'm trying to teach these youngsters. You can get to know the God that I know without becoming aligned to an organization that is into their own selves. I have said often, as a matter of fact, the day that I walked in this house with my wife, and I told my wife, I said, this house will be dedicated unto the Lord's service and work. It didn't mean that I wouldn't have people coming in here that has a record for doing criminal things. Because I believe that all of us have done criminal things. You know what the Bible says? All has sinned and come short of the glory of God. Every one of us are depraved or wretched or decrepit. You don't hear pastors talking like that on Sunday morning, do you? No, he'd clean the whole hell house out. So people have had unique experiences, and you must consider those things. In a class of men and women, many women will be left out of a question like, when did you get your first car? See, and so you can't ask questions that everybody can't relate to, and you have to know that. Also, make sure that the question is interesting to everyone in the room, not just your boys that you invited by to hear you kind of like show them. See, I know the Bible, so y'all come. No, no, no. There may be somebody in the group that ain't your boy. You see, there may be someone in the group that never got that close. Is it interesting to everyone in the room? So questions fall flat because they ask for information. You know, when you look at John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. Okay, how do we know that God loved the world? See, or abstractly, you may ask, what does it mean to love? See what I mean? An interesting question will touch on a specific concern of most of the people present. Now, if you got somebody in the room that's never been loved, that doesn't believe that love exists, he or she is going to be a problem. Because they're going to press you as to whether you love them. Let me go back. The man was in prison. And the man, you can tell he was in prison. He was built up in prison. Muscles over every inch of his body, and paint all over, and just ooh. And we're talking, and I'm looking at him, and I do what I always do when I teach. I love. He picked it up. I looked deep into his eyes. He looked deep into mine. He knew I was paying attention to him. That young man at 33, opened all the way up. He just opened. And then what I proceeded to do, I proceeded to tell him about how life is affecting him, and he kept smiling and saying, yes, yes. I didn't have to open up a Bible, though he knew who he was speaking with. Are you guys listening to me? Because if you're not listening to me, you're not getting it. Okay. An interesting question will touch on a specific concern of most of the people present. People that give seminars. This man was given a seminar on women in leadership, and he knew some of the women that were attending it were vitally interested in that particular topic. So he gave a simple question like, where do you think women most struggle in balancing their multiple roles today? Now that grabbed their attention, because some questions merely set up other questions, so they won't be interesting within themselves. You know, like a question like, what are the three principles, views of the atonement? Those are difficult questions. It's not interesting unless it leads to an immediacy, like, what theory do you feel is the most faithful to the biblical text and all stuff like that. So you got to be very careful about what you choose to talk about. And just because you've studied, hey, listen to this one, homespun teachers, just because you've studied a particular issue or item about something and you find it interesting, it does not necessarily mean. Now, I need some of you so-called teachers to listen, because I saw this happen to me. I remember one guy in the church, he would choose something, and you know, they had to present their Bible format lessons to me before I let them present it to the people. And I would come back to this one male teacher and say, "Why are you presenting this?" He didn't get it. I said, "Why are you presenting this? This isn't even interesting to me. I said, see, this interests you. It doesn't interest everyone. See, listen, I am probably not the best philosophy teacher in the world, but I'll tell you one thing. If you go to Rachel Professor and type in my name under Harbor College, you see what the students say about me. And then if you knew anything about my preaching ability, you know what I'm doing in that classroom. There's some student that's going to flat out dislike me because they don't like my style, my temperature in teaching. And then there's other students that will say, I've learned more in my life than I've ever learned from this man. And I remember there was a professor friend of mine who passed on. And when I went to his page, I just said, Lord, have mercy. And this guy had a double PhD in philosophy. But as a teacher, he was lousy. But he was brilliant in his mind. Maybe he was better in his earlier years. Another question that you got to ask is what you're teaching clear and simple? See, now that you may say, well, John, you can't really say. Yes, you can. If you have to define words or phrases in the question, it's probably not a good one. See, is it clear and simple? Don't be talking about stuff. Every time you say something, you got to define what it is. Consider the people sitting in front of you, man. If you got some high schoolers sitting in front of you, college agers, wait a minute. If you got some dudes that, you know what? I told a guy, one of the guys that I met, I told him what I do. He said, oh, you one of those. No, man, too many words. You know what he said? He said, too many words, man, too many words. I don't even know what the word you just said meant. Man, you're making me feel stupid. That's what he said. And I looked at him, and that's where I learned my lesson. Oh, my gosh. Keep it clear. Keep it simple. I was talking one time, and T interrupted me, and he said, oh, man, oh, man. I said, what? They don't understand what you're talking about. He said, I understand because I've been with you. But he told me, oh, man, oh, man. If you know T, you know the way T is. He said, they don't understand nothing you talking about. He said, these cats are from, how did he put it? He said that they're from, not the projects. It's another term that he used. Something about the streets. He said, you got to talk street language to reach them. I didn't correct Terrence. I didn't get all upset. Well, you're in my house and you got to listen to the way. No, no. Clear and simple. If you have to define words or phrases in the question, it's probably not a good one. Let's think about the end time teaching of John. His views of the last things. What would you say is the call of many of us today? What is the thing that Christians are to do? Now that keeps it simple and clear. See, what do you think that Christians or people that love God are called to do? You can keep that clear. If according to John, goodwill wins out, what difference can that make in our lives? Now, they can understand that because, see, everybody knows what goodwill is. A goodwill is a favorable feeling towards another person. Keep it simple, clear. Also, Bible teacher, this requires a thoughtful response. In other words, the question should not have an obvious answer. That not only bores the people that are sitting in front of you, but it wastes a lot of class time. See, if you're the teacher, and if you're the one that's supposed to be defining or describing are opening up to other people. First, you got to love the people. You got to love them enough to know that, all right, you're trying to pass on information to them about your creator, God. That is what your intentions are, to pass on this precious information. Again, a step-by-step question may be used quickly, but here's a question that demands something from the class. That's what you want to do. You want to give a question that demands something from the class. People should have to draw on their experience or put together diverse themes or to integrate the teaching into their lives. And consequently, the question with yes or no or multiple choice answers are readily helpful. Your student will find themselves saying, yes, yes, I can relate to that because of this or that. And remember, the kind of questions that you ask will protect people's dignity. In other words, a good question doesn't separate people based upon their knowledge. As in, where else in the Bible do we find this discussion of the relationship between husbands and wives? Right away, Bible novices in the class feel intimidated because they don't know where that is. And then you ask an open-end question like that. Somebody answers that because they like that subject matter because you like it. They like you because you're one of their favorite teachers. Something like that. You see what I mean? And so you don't want to confuse them like that. Also, a good question will not embarrass people. Naturally, if you want people to share personally, you may need to ask some questions that will risk that. But if you know your group, you'll have a sense about the limits of personal questions because you know the person. You know that person can't answer that. You may have someone in the group that dropped out of middle school. Well, then you got to keep your statements and everything down to that level. Believe it or not, when I lecture my college students, I keep that right at that level there where I can reach everyone in the group. It's very important. Oh, my goodness. Someone has a Chevrolet. It looks like a Camaro, a brand new one in a convertible. Just backed up in front of my house and turned around. What a beautiful automobile. And I have no money. Oh, typical, typical, typical. Well, let me end this up. I think that I've done about enough. Work together with your group. Work together with them. Find the art that might go along with your lesson, something practical, a picture, a poster or something that goes along with it, or some material that will lead to the opening of the session. Present slides showing the great works of Western art or music. Try to look into the music of the current day. Who are the current artists leading the way? If you think that some of these artists need to be put on blast, put them on blast, but within the context that your students will understand why you're putting them on blast, because some of these students don't know what's behind the music. It was interesting. I was talking with that young man that had done about 7 years in prison, and he told me, he said, this music that our generation today is listening to is tantamount ranked upon evil. They know it's evil. They know it is. And I said, you know, man, I don't meet too many of you that would say it. He said, man, I spent 7 years in prison, man. And let me tell you, I see the results of people that believe that. Now, I'm sharing this with you guys because if you're going to be successful in helping people, discovering a way to find their way to God, the only way that you're going to be successful in doing that is to consider your methodologies. And don't think that because you believe that you're so spiritual that God is just going to automatically, and that's what automatically just validate everything that you're presupposing. He's not. What I'm talking about takes some thought. That's why I thought that I put this on a webcast, you know. Home church teaching methodologies doesn't mean that you have a church in your home. It means that sometimes somebody's going to say, look, Leroy, you have a background somewhat in that book, and we want to bring some people over, and we like to ask you some questions. And so, Leroy, when you bring them by, you got to answer those questions in a very adequate way. I hope that Pastor John, your internet pastor, has equipped you somewhat to answer those questions. So thank you so much for tuning in to the webcast today. God bless you. And listen, hey, Scouts Honor, I'm going to try to have a nice sermon up for you to listen to. God bless. Whatever you do, you know the drill. Stay in the Word.